Welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. It is Steelers week here in Cincinnati. The Bengals are getting ready to face the Pittsburgh Steelers at Paul Brown Stadium, the second matchup of the year between these two teams. And it's looking like one of the best matchups of the week because there's a lot on the line for both teams in this game. But before we start talking about the Steelers matchup in particular, Charlie, when you look at the Bengals game against the Raiders and you went back and watched the film and in the tape, what stood out to you most following the game?
Two things I saw that I didn't realize could be such strengths and such weapons for the Bengals in two areas I didn't expect. The first was how well the Bengals defended the middle of the field. The Raiders tried to run so much of their offense through their running back and through their slot receiver and also through their tight ends. And aside from four plays, the Bengals defense held serve and controlled that crucial territory every single time and limited almost any explosive plays against the Raiders offense that's looked really good this season. The way the Bengals were able to guard over the middle really makes me more confident in that unit. And then offensively, I didn't know that the Bengals' interior offensive line could be so physical in the run game. Like, Joe Mixon looked like a bowling ball, but there were moments where offensive guards and centers and Trey Hopkins were throwing guys around, were pushing the pile forward, were sprinting out in space and leading the way with the shoulder. There were moments where I circled offensive line play in space as a strength. And that's something the Bengals have prioritized, but we've only seen flashes of that manifesting in a game. We saw it, and it was one of the biggest reasons the Bengals beat the Raiders. And it's another reason I'm a lot more confident in the Bengals.
Well, speaking of what you just mentioned on the offensive line, yesterday I wrote a piece of that was taking a look at the Pro Football Focus grades that came out. And for all that we talk about how the offensive line needs to be better, I think let's spend some time talking about how well they played against the Raiders, specifically in the run game. We've known Quentin Spain has been the team's best offensive lineman in the run game, but he actually was fantastic in pass protection, too. He graded out as the highest graded offensive lineman total for the Bengals. He and Jonah Williams, in my opinion, are playing the best of all of the Bengals' offensive line. I think obviously, you expected Jonah being a first-round pick to play at a high level this year, but he's played very well. So has Quentin Spain, and it was a better showing for Trey Hopkins. And it seems like, based off of the way Zach Taylor responded about Hakeem Adeniji and the progress that he's made at right guard, they think that they might have found an answer at right guard. I mean, I guess we'll see how it shakes out with seven games to go. But it seems like they're finding some answers on the offensive line, and that's a plus heading into the seven-game stretch.
I think the Raiders game was more about the interior offensive line than the tackles. I think Jonah Williams and Riley Reiff struggled, especially in the first half, before the Bengals made the game plan shift to become an exclusively run game, setting up quick game offense. When they tried to drop back, the opportunities weren't there, mostly because they didn't win their one-on-one matchups against two great edge rushers in Ngakoue and Crosby. But then again, there was almost a stylistic change, too. It was almost like a Big Ten offense in the second half. Heavy formations, guys right next to each other, stacked up on the line of scrimmage, like watching Iowa with, like, no skill position players on the field whatsoever. It felt like that at times, and the Bengals' interior offensive linemen in particular really set the tone with just how bruising they were in space, creating opportunities for huge runs for Mixon, for P. Ryan, on jet sweep, stuff like that. When you look back at a lot of biggest plays in the game, you'll find an offensive lineman in the picture, or Stanley Morgan doing something really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the run game in particular, about Joe Mixon, what this means moving forward. Obviously, I think when people first set up to game plan against the Bengals, they'd probably start with the receivers and, hey, how are we going to take away Ja'Marr Chase and make sure they don't beat us down the field? And then, of course, Tyler Boyd being the chain mover that he is on third down, especially. Then you add in Joe Mixon, and he's always been, you know, a focal point of this offense. But with the way that Zach made a commitment to using him, I think showed Mixon a lot. After the game, he said, you know, he really likes being the guy that can carry the weight of the team. And he's such an energy guy that you can tell when Joe Mixon starts to feel good about himself and the way he's running, when he's able to get positive yards, the whole team kind of feeds off of it because he's just such an energy guy for this team. But I look at the Bengals, and a team that is having so much success running the ball is the Colts. And I'm not trying to say that Joe Mixon is Jonathan Taylor or the Bengals' offensive line is the Colts' offensive line. Both very good. But what the Colts have been able to do in terms of just absolutely like win time of possession and get themselves back into a, you know, 5-5 and an even record. I think the Colts are showing, hey, here's what you can do with a really good running back. And I think Joe Mixon can be that guy. I really do think that the Bengals can ride Joe Mixon out.
I wonder if the Bengals, like, learned something on Sunday, because they really, like, made a mid-game change I didn't expect. It was the 3rd-and-1 down far into their own territory. The jet sweep to Ja'Marr Chase that gets tackled in the backfield for a loss. Punt, drive over. It seems like the Bengals learned from that play. After that play, the Bengals then abandoned that approach and became a team that was just willing to hand the ball off to Mixon or Piran, who made a big run on 3rd and short. That had been such a weakness this year. But the Bengals, after that play, said, you know what? We're just going to roll with it. And frankly, they needed to. You know, I've mentioned this a million times. The games where the Bengals have struggled this season are the games where opposing teams rush 4, don't blitz, and drop back 7. That was the Jets. That was the Browns. That was the Bears in particular. And that was the Raiders. And just think about it. When you only rush 4 and you drop 7 back in coverage, that opens up the middle of the field. That's a defense screaming, we dare you to run the ball. And that was the reason the Bengals established the run, or wanted to establish the run. And the fact that they stuck with it leads me to believe that they could find a path to success against the style of defense they've struggled against. It's really important. And Joe Mixon's playing some of the best, most important football of his career, because he could be changing the Bengals' approach against the type of defense they've struggled against the most.
And if you look across the league, I mean, I mentioned the Colts, but the Eagles are running the ball really well, and that's helped them win some games. The 49ers are going to – they run the ball. That's helped them win some games. When you get to December, the teams that really prosper are the teams that can run the ball. And for the Bengals to show this type of progress with Mixon and the offensive line, I think is huge for what this offense can be moving forward. Obviously, against the Raiders, Tyler Boyd played a very good game. A quieter game for T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase in terms of, like, big explosive plays. But, of course, Ja'Marr Chase connecting with Joe Burrow on that touchdown to really take the lead in the game was huge. Overall, they kind of sputtered a little bit on offense at the beginning of the game. They still – that seems to be the one thing that's missing with this team is their ability to start fast in games. Charlie, what are you kind of noticing with why they can't start games fast?
Well, against the Raiders, it was solely because they tried to establish themselves as a drop back passing team, especially on 3rd downs. And what happened, I believe the first 3rd down was that strip sack fumble that the Raiders returned for a while. And that second 3rd down was a play where Ngakoue just broke free. Burrow had to just throw the ball away. He ended up getting a late hit, 15 yards, but they didn't make it farther than that after that penalty either. They had a slow start solely because they struggled blocking on the edge, which is a problem. But they did show a composed response to that with how, you know, later on 3rd downs, how they just relied on the quick game, specifically recognizing that Boyd could get open really quickly against the linebacker, which is who he was matched up against, and then creating more 3rd and short opportunities to run the ball during the game. They kind of fixed that 3rd down problem with a stylistic change specifically tailored to the Raiders defense. And you know what? Give Zach Taylor a lot of credit for that. This was a game plan he stuck with, and it was a game plan that worked, and that worked for the right reasons too. There was almost nothing fluky about the success the Bengals offense had in the second half. And that was, again, really impressive when I rewatched that game.
Yep, for sure. And then defensively on the other side of the ball, I want to talk about a trend that I saw. A better tackling performance by Jesse Bates. I think he was the highest graded tackling player by Pro Football Focus. But you mentioned that the middle of the field was better. But at the same time, I'm wondering at what point Jermaine Pratt and the Bengals just kind of lack of depth at linebacker right now is going to become an issue, because Logan Wilson played better against the Raiders, but Jermaine Pratt did not have his best game. And I feel like at some point with some of these games, with like maybe against like the Chargers and the 49ers, who have more of like a dynamic offense, I think we're going to start to see teams, as we did against the Jets and the Browns, really start attacking the second level of the Bengals defense, because I just think the linebacker group is probably the biggest weakness of the Bengals defense.
So I don't remember specifically each of the three plays to the tight ends on that touchdown drive, but I know the touchdown was against Logan Wilson, and Waller's other explosive play was against Jesse Bates, and I believe he had another decent pickup against Bell as well. So I don't want to pin that on the linebackers in particular. Looking at the state of the position, like Akeem Davis-Gaither, who's out for the year with a foot injury, he played a role. He was their sixth man. I call him like their small ball center, because what do you do when you face a high-powered offense? You put in a more athletic guy who can cover more space and hang with the athletic playmakers in the middle of the field. Akeem Davis-Gaither was that guy, and now he's out. The Bengals' response was twofold. One more playing time for Pratt, who I didn't notice as much, but you do have to give him credit for how the Raiders weren't able to run the ball. And just for the number of behind-the-sticks tackles the Bengals had in the pass game and the run game as well, with Pratt filling those gaps. But then second, on the passing downs, the Bengals made a stylistic change. They became a three-safety unit. Ricardo Allen, his role exploded without Akeem Davis-Gaither. They basically made Von Bell a linebacker on third downs. As I mentioned, Bell might have given up a play or two, but overall, I saw more of a stylistic change since Davis-Gaither was out. While Pratt got a few more of those snaps, I don't know that I would necessarily put some of the explosive plays Waller had on him. So overall, like, the Bengals linebacker position's in a state of flux. Will you see more three safety looks when they play the Chargers and the Chiefs and the Ravens even? Or will they stick with Pratt or even Marcus Bailey and give them more playing time? That's a question I have. But overall, I didn't leave the game concerned with the Bengals linebackers.
The Akeem Davis-Gaither injury, I think, is a bigger one than maybe people might expect, because going into the season, Lou Anarumo told me he was the player that he thought would have the biggest surprise impact on the defense heading in, and now he's obviously not available to them. So we shall see how that shakes out. All right, so moving on to the upcoming matchup between the Bengals and the Steelers. It's a big one for a lot of reasons, playoff purposes. Winning the division is still something the Bengals can very much do. And let's talk about what do you think is going to be the biggest change from the Bengals from week three when they went into Pittsburgh and dominated the Steelers to now? What do you think's changed most about the Bengals?
That's a great question. And now I'm going to think about it for a second. I don't know. I think the physicality that the offensive line had in the run game was a new development, and I'm very interested to see how much that could carry over. I think that Burrow's playing better, certainly. I think the Bengals have more ways in the pass game that they can beat a defense. Since that game, the offense has created explosive plays to T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd and C.J. Uzomah more consistently. And then in the Raiders game, they showed that the run game can be a source of explosive plays as well. So probably overall, it's a more well-balanced offense. But then again, the Bengals game against the Steelers was their most well-balanced game of the year. I'd have to think about that more, but those are some initial things that come to mind.
I think that when I think about what's changed with the Bengals, I think I agree with you, the physicality in the run game. But I also think a kind of a negative change is I'm not sure I'm seeing the same type of impact up front from the Bengals defensive line as we did in week three, because that was kind of when that Bengals defensive line was really humming. DJ Reader, Larry Ogunjobi, Sam Hubbard, Trey Hendrickson. Trey Hendrickson had a great game against the Raiders, a highest graded PFF player for the Bengals, but they're not dominating and taking over games in the way that they were, and I'm just wondering how that's going to come into play against the Steelers this time around. And I also think what's changed is, and Mike Tomlin said it, it feels like every year in the month of September, a rookie wide receiver kind of takes the NFL by storm because nobody's really expecting it and nobody can really quite figure it out. We haven't seen the same type of explosive plays to Ja'Marr Chase that we did the first meeting. So I'm interested to see which ways Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan really scheme up ways for Ja'Marr Chase to get involved down the field. And I know a lot of it comes off of those scramble plays and off-schedule plays, but to me, what they do with Ja'Marr Chase in this game, because Pittsburgh's defense is so well-coached and smart, I have my eye on those two things in particular.
So I've been thinking a lot about Ja'Marr after seeing that Tomlin quote. Here was my reaction. So about Mike Tomlin, as you said every receiver takes the league by storm in September, and now that he has those plays on tape, the league has adjusted. But I was thinking, all right, the Jets game was a game where Ja'Marr Chase didn't have an opportunity to create an explosive play. That's right, with how the Jets guarded him. But the Bengals in that game had two chances and connected on one outside to T. Higgins. You can live with that. The Browns game, There were two chances for Chase to get a deep ball. I believe one was thrown out of bounds and one was dropped by Chase. But there was an opportunity for a deep explosive play that just didn't connect. And then last week in Las Vegas, there was that deep ball right before halftime they attempted to chase. Chase was wide open. And to be honest, it was Burrow's worst deep ball throw of the season. But if that throw is on time and on target, that's probably a touchdown. I think it was the exact same play that they ran against the Bears for a touchdown. So, the Bengals offense still has the opportunities to use Chase for explosive plays. They've had that opportunity in the sample size over the last 3 weeks for a number of different reasons. Pin a little bit of it on Burrow, pin a little bit of it on Chase, pin a little bit of it on the way the Jets guarded them. It hasn't panned out, but I need to see one or two more games where they don't connect for me to officially see that as a trend, because they've been close.
Right. It's definitely a trend to keep your eye on. I also want to talk about TJ Watt being back in this game. The Steelers are going to be a lot healthier than they were the first time around when they played the Bengals. And they're going to have Minka Fitzpatrick, TJ Watt, and Cam Hayward all healthy. Speaking of TJ Watt, I think this is a test for the Bengals. Okay, against the Raiders, it was at the edge players. The Bengals had to go into the game knowing Crosby and Ngakoue were going to try and create havoc. Cam Hayward changes the game here because the interior pressure he's able to bring, and he is playing some of his best football despite being well into his career. He hasn't lost anything, and to be honest, watching him play against the Chargers on Sunday, he is a total game wrecker. So now the Bengals are going to have to worry about the edge with TJ Watt and the way the Steelers blitz with Minka Fitzpatrick and some of their corners. And then you've got to deal with Cam Hayward. This is a tough assignment in terms of the protection plans. And I would love to be a fly on the wall in Brian Callahan in the offensive meetings, because I don't think people understand just how much of a difference Cam Hayward makes in the interior. And then, oh, by the way, you have to worry about, I mean, in my opinion, TJ Watt is the best defensive player in the NFL just because of his ability to not just bring pressure, but it just seems like he punches the ball out or he's around the ball and makes those impact plays at like the most important time. And I think that when you have to deal with that type of edge player and the interior guy like Cam Hayward, it's a tough task.
So what made the Bengals' first game against the Steelers so interesting was, I believe that game was a career low in passing attempts for Joe Burrow. Mm-hmm. That was a game where, all right, so it all changed at the end of the first half. Burrow, Chase says, oh, I'm going to be open on this play. And then he runs down the sideline and he makes, I think, his catch of the year on that deep ball where he kind of makes a fingertip grab in the end zone. Perfect. Bengals establish the lead. I believe they get the ball back then at the start of the second half, have a long drive, extend that lead, and are able to just you know, basically run the 4 minute offense for the rest of the game and run out the clock. That, you know, you can't expect that to happen every week. You can't expect to get a 2-score lead over Pittsburgh and be able to play with that style. So that's still a question. If the Bengals are in catch-up mode, if Joe Burrow needs to throw the ball 40 times, what does that iteration of the Bengals offense look against the Steelers defense? Because that's what we didn't see the first time. And that's still an unknown how even if the two teams are neck and neck in the game in the fourth quarter, what exactly is the game plan there to take advantage when you need to pass the ball?
Yeah, the best way for the Bengals to win this game, in my opinion, is to get up early on the Steelers so that you don't turn into playing catch-up mode where TJ and those guys can just pin their ears back and just get after Joe, because I just don't think the Bengals offensive line can hold up against those guys. So to talk about the division quickly before we head out of here, the Ravens lead the division at 7-3. The Bengals are 6-4, the Steelers 5-4, and the Browns 6-5. What do you think about where this division is at right now?
Yeah, I think Baltimore is going to win the division because they have the most explosive offense, but I think the Bengals are going to make the playoffs by finishing second. Mm-hmm. In the Raiders game in particular, and what I've seen emerge as trend since the bye week gives me a lot of confidence in the areas I wanted to see them correct after the losses to the Browns and the Jets. I think they found their best possible solution at right guard. I think last week their interior offensive lineman showed an awareness of what's needed to have success in the short yardage rushing situations and the awareness to create explosiveness with their athleticism down the field. And then defensively, with what the defense did over the middle and how they fixed their tackling issues and how Jesse Bates was playing more confidently, all of those answered questions to me I still had about the Bengals. Because they fixed that, because Joe Burrow, I think, is one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the NFL, and because they have so many home games to end the season, I think the Bengals are slated right now, more likely than not, to make the playoffs.
I agree with that, but I will be able to tell you more about what I really think about this team after this game on Sunday, because I just have this feeling that the Steelers are pissed off about what happened against the Chargers, and they want to win this game, and I think they're going to be ready to go. So if the Bengals win this game, look, I'm going to give them all the credit in the world, because I think this is a monster game for the Bengals to show that it wasn't just a fluke when they beat the Steelers and the Ravens on the road. But I agree with you. I think the Ravens win the division, and the Browns are just imploding. Yeah, that's a mess up there in Cleveland. But that is for another day for us to talk about. Well, that's it for Charlie and I getting you guys set for the upcoming game against the Steelers. Now we're going to bring in Jason Hoffman for your favorite overs, unders, and NFL talk spread that we got coming up here. Thanks to everyone. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Well, here's Jason Hoffman. Jason, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, but I should be asking, for those listening to this, can't see the smile on Kelsey's face right now, but I should be asking how you're doing, accurately predicting the Fighting Mike Zimmers, look, taking down Turf Toe himself, John COVID Aaron Rodgers Wick, COVID Toe.
Look, I just had a feeling. I knew that Mike Zimmer was going to have those guys ready to go, and the Packers, they always have a couple clumsy losses before they really get going. And I think they're banged up. And I just had a feeling. So, yeah, I'm going to pat myself on the back for that one. And I'm doing that right now.
Good, good. we did pretty well last week. I'm not going to lie. I was most excited that I was wrong on how much the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were going to blow out the New York Football Giants by. That was a fun game to watch, even though a lot of people probably didn't like it on Monday night.
And did you pick the Cowboys?
I did.
See, I think I picked the Chiefs, didn't I? Yep, I picked the Chiefs.
You did, and you were right on that.
I crushed it. You know what,
though? I'm glad, because my whole point was, do we trust a Mike McCarthy coach team in that situation?
No, we do not.
And I said this was a deciding game for them. So they're gone. They're out of my lexicon.
You can't pick them
of
to win the
contenders,
NFC.
Challengers, yeah, whatever right now, because it was all in front of them, and oh boy, did they lay a clunker. Mm-hmm. So moving on, week 12, here we go. We got some early games. We got three Thursday games. The Thanksgiving slate this year is rather unimpressive, but I'm going to get us started.
Okay.
I got to say, nothing excites me more than knowing that as I'm sitting down on my first Thanksgiving meal, I'm going to get to watch Andy Dalton play on Thanksgiving against the Detroit Lions.
I literally tweeted, I hope that's my nap game.
A lot of people are in that boat, yes. But come on, it's Andy. As everyone joked last week when the Bears were close to beating the Ravens with him, he keeps trying to give back to the greater Cincinnati community. Didn't work out that way. This game has the Bears minus 3.5 at Detroit.
Yep.
3.5 is a number for that team to cover that. I don't know that they can, and I don't care who's playing quarterback for the Lions. The Lions to cover the 3.5 is a minus 130. The Bears are a plus 105. So you can get decent money on them to cover that 3.5 if you like it. I don't like it, but I'll tell you what I do like is the over 41.5. I think this is, as much as everyone says this will be a clunker, take your nap game, I like some stupid things to happen.
Jeez.
Maybe we'll see a punt return kickoff, or a kickoff punt return, whatever, for a touchdown. We'll see a couple of pick sixes, maybe a scoop and score, something crazy. I like the over number on this to get the day started off right. Some entertaining football, what say you?
So the games stink. I'm really bummed because I obviously love to watch football and would love to sit on my couch and watch all three games. But the game that really stands out to me is the Thursday night game, because I think the Cowboys are going to roll the Raiders. I have no idea who's going to win the Bears-Lions game. If Justin Fields was playing, I'd probably say the Bears. But I have no idea. I really have – I watched the Lions win that game. I don't know. Something like that would happen to them. I mean, I guess if Jared Goff plays, that's kind of a factor, but it sounds like he's going to. The reason I say the Bills-Saints game stands out to me is because I'm not sure what to make of the Buffalo Bills recently, and I don't know. Sean Payton always has his team ready to go, and I believe that game is in New Orleans.
Correct.
Yeah, that place.
6.5
having,
points.
Having been there.
New Orleans getting 6.5.
Yeah, I saw that. And
with no quarterback to speak of.
Taysom Hill. They just paid him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's yeah. Restructuring. Have you seen the details of that contract?
Yeah, it's interesting.
He can get paid as a receiver. H-back yeah. or quarterback, depending on what. Yeah.
I think they just. Yeah, I have no idea what they're doing. I also think there's going to be a star quarterback in New Orleans next year who might be coming from Seattle, but we'll debate that in the offseason. So that game's really the only one on Thursday that I have my eye on. It would not shock me if the Saints upset the Bills at home in just a freak kind of game. But
that's a plus 220 on the money line for those of you at home, so 2.2 times your money.
So I'm going to go with the upset there, and I'm going to call the Saints.
Is that your home dog of the week?
No.
Okay.
No, it is not my home dog.
That's
of the
a big
week.
Call, though. That's so, 6.5 points. That's, okay.
So
I like it.
That's kind of how low I am on the Bills right now.
Okay. Very well. Which means they'll have a bounce back game and won by 21. Yeah. All right. So moving on, the Carolina Panthers. Do we know what they are?
No.
But more importantly, do we know what the Miami Dolphins are?
We do not.
So this line confuses me.
Okay.
1.5 points. Carolina laying 1.5 at Miami.
Yeah.
Now, I like Cam Newton in that game to just take it over and run for, we'll just say, 80-plus yards.
Oops.
Maybe throw for a couple. Who knows? But I just don't see this Miami team stopping that offense, especially with a healthy McCaffrey back. But I'm so confused why the line's only 1.5. So obviously Vegas knows something I don't know.
I think it's because of recency bias towards the Dolphins, them winning the two games, them looking like an actual team against the Ravens, and then obviously winning last week. I think that's a case of recency bias. And, like, in my opinion, it doesn't matter who's playing quarterback for the Panthers right now. They're just a middle-of-the-road team, and I think – the Dolphins are hot right now, and that's probably why. That's probably what Vegas is feeling.
But I would argue a middle-of-the-road team versus an up and in the NFC versus an up-and-coming AFC team, I'd take the NFC team all day long.
But the Dolphins are not – they weren't supposed to be that bad this year. They won 10 games last year. So that's why I think you got to factor that in. They're not that bad. They just started the season playing horrible.
Okay. Well, either way – I do not like the spread in that game, so I'm going to go with my second pick in a row on the over-under, and I'm going to take the under, 42.5 points.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Currently even money, minus 110, well, even money on in the book. So you pay the 10% juice, whatever. Moving on, speaking of the Dolphins, recent victim of theirs, the New York Jets.
Jeez, that game.
Are you ready for
Texans.
This, Kelsey? Are you ready?
They might as well put that one on Thanksgiving, too.
I know. And the look on your face was awesome when you said that. But the Texans are favored in this game.
Because they beat the Titans.
By 3.5.
I know. They literally – they'll probably beat the Jets. Because Tyrod Taylor, he – got to give him some credit. I mean, he has been everywhere in the NFL, and he can still play – and, I mean, the Texans have nothing to play for at this point. And the Jets, did you hear – I know we're not supposed to talk about much other than what the betting in this part, but did you hear that the Jets brought in Zach Wilson's, like, QB trainer and added him on the staff because his fundamentals had been struggling so bad? Like, that can't happen when you're the number two overall pick. It just can't.
This is correct.
Which is why I have no faith in the Jets and am totally taking the Texans in that game.
They feel like an organization right now.
Disaster.
That is scrambling to put out a bunch of little fires while ignoring the huge fire in the background, which is they suck at personnel decisions.
Yeah.
But yes, Houston, this one cracks me up. So they are plus 105 to still win the game, even though they're 3.5-point favorites. So I would like to take a money line favorite, the Fighting Tyrod Taylors,
mm-hmm.
win outright at +105 against the New York Jets. And I hope Elias Sports Bureau does some research for us, because I believe if Josh Johnson gets into this game between him and Tyrod Taylor, we would have a game where the two quarterbacks currently playing would have the most combined ever teams that they've played for in the NFL. Because I think Josh Johnson's at like 13 now, maybe 14. And Taylor's certainly not that far behind. So I like the Texans in this, whatever. You're right. It should be a supplemental, like, stream on Nickelodeon, Yahoo Sports, something like that on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Moving right along. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, speaking of the Monday night victors.
This is my home dog.
So you're going against the Buccaneers.
I am.
Okay. I'll let you lead off then, since you're picking the upset here.
I might as well be right now in royal blue and white. Because let me just tell you how strongly I feel about the Indianapolis Colts. I think they could rival the New England Patriots right now as the best team in the AFC, despite their record, because I think Jonathan Taylor is unbelievable. I love the way they play up front. And I think the Colts were supposed to be a really good team coming into this season, and they started horrible. And I can't quite put my finger on what that was, but I think Frank Wright is a really good coach, and I think Jonathan Taylor is the best running back in the NFL when Derrick Henry is not in the game. And I think they have a good enough defense that I think they're going to beat the Bucs, because especially this game being at home in Indianapolis. And I think that Tampa still has to figure it out. I watched their whole game against the Giants, and they barely could put the Giants away for most of the game. And I just think that defensively, they're not what they were on the secondary last year. I know they're probably going to get Carlton Davis back this year, but I'm telling you, I think the Colts are running away with this game. And I think it might be a two-score performance in terms of, I think the Colts could maybe win this game by like 10 points. So there's my home dog. I'm riding with the Colts hard. I can't believe I'm picking against Tom Brady, but I'm telling you, I think the Colts are playing well right now.
All right. I like it. You heard it here first, folks. This is another game, and I'm just being a total chicken this week, I guess. I'm staying away from the spread, even though I think this is going to be one of those Tom Brady nightmare games.
In a good way?
In a bad way.
Oh.
Where he throws multiple picks.
Yeah.
Things just don't get going, and Carson Wentz looks like the all-pro / MVP candidate that everyone thought he was. I'm staying away from the spread and the money line. I'm going all the way back to the over-under, 50.5. I'm staying under that. I think that number's too high.
Yeah.
I don't think the Bucs are going to score enough. And again, like the Bucs, just be open about that. Huge Tom Brady fan. Love watching that guy run an offense.
Same.
So I hope they win another Super Bowl personally. But I think this is a clunker game for them. I don't think they score enough to get to the 50.5. I'll take the under there as well.
Your dream, I feel like, in the NFC would be
Cardinals Bucks.
No, I was going to say it.
But you already
beat me
know
too.
This.
I know. But which for football fans, that'd be a fantastic matchup. So I would be excited for that one.
I would take the over regardless of where you set it at in that game.
That to me was that's the game of the week. The other game I potentially had my eye on was the Vikings at 49ers, because I think that 49ers are going to win that game at home, even though they're favored. So I think that was another game where I think the 49ers are starting to roll, and this would be a classic letdown game for the Vikings to, you know, beat the Packers and then go lose to the 49ers. So those were the two games that really caught my eye. I also think the Ravens are going to cover the spread against the Browns. I think the Browns are absolutely imploding.
So Baltimore -3.5. Yeah. I looked this up. The teams are identical right now on the season against the spread.
Okay.
Both teams in primetime are identical against the spread. Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson right now on the last 10 games each are identical against the spread.
Wow.
So from a betting standpoint, this is as even as you can make it. Baltimore -3.5. If Lamar plays, which I don't know if you saw the drama. You were probably making your way to the stadium on Sunday.
About him being sick?
All the line drama happened with the Ravens-Bears game.
They
pulled that off the board. came back out. It became a half point game, as we all saw that that was very close. If Lamar plays, I will take the Ravens. I agree with you, -3.5. If he doesn't play, this will probably come off the board. Cleveland will probably be favored by a point or something, even though, they're putting Baker Mayfield together with duct tape and paper clips right now. I agree with you. I think Cleveland's imploding. I think one of the main reasons is the quote face of the franchise and the other face in that household of the franchise can't get out of their own way.
It's never a good thing when a wife starts calling people out on Instagram.
And you know what's funny? I have no problem with Matt Stafford's wife throwing a pretzel at a fan.
Yes.
That's whatever.
Yeah, that's hilarious. You're
caught up in the moment, it's hilarious.
And like how that's a TMZ story is absolutely ridiculous.
It is. And I love what Stafford did after that. And he's basically like, well, if I didn't play like dog crap, then she wouldn't have gotten mad and thrown a pretzel. That's fine. Can't have the wife of the starting quarterback of the
questioning the toughness of teammates.
And God bless Baker. I don't want to know what it was like walking into that locker room, because you know all the guys in there saw that, were alerted to that. Yeah. Oh, boy. So, yes, Baltimore -3.5. Give it to me at 6 if you want, as long as Lamar plays 6.5 as well.
Well, I feel like now we got to talk about the game of the week, and that is the Bengals and Steelers, right?
We do, but first I'm going to get to my home dog pick.
Oh.
My home dog pick is going to be the New York Giants.
Haven't we picked the New York Giants to be the home dog like 3 other times this season?
I have. Catching the Eagles, who look like an absolute runaway freight train right now.
How about that? Okay, Jalen Hurts, we see you.
Yeah, we talked about it last week. I'm probably going to regret this because it's 3.5 points. They look terrible on Monday night, even though Tampa Bay let him stay in the game.
And they fired Jason Garrett.
Freddie Kitchens' revenge game.
Freddie Kitchens.
He's back calling plays on the sideline.
Tell me someone who has more lives than Freddie Kitchens as a play caller.
Oh, that's a good question. That'd be a great topic for a we don't have a bye week anymore. But if we had a bye week episode, that'd be a great topic. Looking at you, Hugh Jackson. So I'm going to take the Giants to win outright. That number right now is a +180. So $100 wins you $180. Just because I can't, even though I think the Colts are going to, I agree with you, the Colts are going to blow. I can't go against
Tom.
TV12. So yes, let's move on. Sunday, the game you, Charlie, Doc, and our wonderful photo staff will be at, the Cincinnati Bengals hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers. 4.5 point favorites right now. -220 to win the game outright. They're entering that zone where you're a prohibitive betting favorite at 4.5 points. How do you see? I'm sure everyone already heard this, but from just a 4.5 point standpoint, what do you think of that line?
I think it's probably right. I mean, based off of the way that the Bengals dominated the Steelers the first time around, and just based off the fact that I think the score against the Raiders is very misleading. So I think that has a lot to do with that. I can see why they're favored the way they are. Does that mean I think that's how the game's going to go? No, I'm staying away from this game, so I'll let you take that.
Okay. Any thoughts real quick on the over-under of 45.5 points? 24-21 game. Under?
Under.
Okay. So my thoughts – I don't like the Bengals to cover any spread right now, just because if you watch their games and you do not have the score handy, you would not know for a fact, last week especially, until the very end, that they were winning.
Right. And in Allegiant Stadium, like, you couldn't find the score anywhere. Their like score board was like not visible. So I at some points were like, wait, who's winning this game?
No, and it's incredible. So teams like that, I do not like ever taking at home to cover more than 3 points. So if you think about it, the Bengals are actually 1.5 point favorites here because they get the 3 for being at home. Mm-hmm. 45.5, the over under. I don't like it just because we're getting into winning time and it's getting cold out and you got to put a coat on. This is when traditionally Mike Tomlin coach Steelers teams turn it on, especially that defense, which looks
he's coming for blood this weekend.
Yes. Allegedly they're going to have
TJ their Watt, stars back. Minka and
all, yeah. So I don't like the over there. I don't necessarily like the under just because, again, 24-21, you'd cover by a half point, but I like Pittsburgh plus the 4.5 here.
Okay.
Just because I think that it's – even if the Bengals win, I think it's a field goal game. I hope for all of my listener Bengals fans that I'm wrong here and they just win in an absolute walk. But I don't see it. Unless this team comes out and we get early season Joe Burrow with that offense clicking.
And Jamar Chase.
And early season Jamar Chase. I don't see it. However, if you're going to make a statement, this is the week to make a statement because the week after, got those guys in powder blue and gold coming here.
Love their jerseys.
They're outstanding.
Could do a whole like power rank NFL teams uniforms. Maybe we'll save that for the offseason, but continue.
Yeah. So this is a big game because unless I see something out of this team this Sunday that makes me think, oh, they are world beaters. Here we go. Oh boy, that Chargers team looks like they actually could be world beaters. So we'll have that coming up next week. But yeah, Pittsburgh plus the 4.5. As much as I know people in this town are going to hate me saying that. If you'd want, I'd go the under 45.5. I see a 24-21 game either way. I'm not going to pick an actual outright winner because, like I said, I don't know. And Ben Roethlisberger may or may not look amazing. He may or may not play well. Who knows? So, yeah, Pittsburgh plus 4.5 is my pick. And if I'm wrong next week, hey, that's fine. Let me know.
It's all in good fun, right?
That's right. And speaking of fun, I'd like to remind everybody that this is not actual gambling advice. We are just doing this for fun. All lines are courtesy of Tipico Sportsbook USA, which is a partner with our parent company, Gannett Company, Inc. If you or anyone you know have a gambling problem, please contact 1-800-GAMBLER. And Kelsey and everyone listening, you all have a very, very happy Thanksgiving. Let's hope the football is a lot better than we think it's going to be. And even if it's not, still football. Still fun to watch.